listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have got a great, talented artist named Daniel Corey. Say hello, Daniel. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me on, man.
No problem.
This is fun, yeah.
You have an interesting take. I'm actually excited to ask you some questions. You come from the comic world in music. So tell me a little bit about your background in the comic world and VR.
Well, I know a lot of folks, when I say I work in comics, they think I mean stand-up. It's right. Actually too confused once I get into this. But yeah, no, I'm a writer, and I've done a handful of graphic novel series. I did a few books for Image Comics, and some people might know Image Comics from The Walking Dead. That was a book that they published.
That's right.
So, and
how did you get into that? Were you way into comic books as a kid? Were you into Batman all of those? Like, I remember being into all of the Spider-Man, Batman, Superman, Punisher, Incredible Hulk, Fantastic Four. I was a nerd with that stuff. I loved it. So
me too. Hard. Yeah. It's funny. I know we have a common friend, Karuna Tanahashi. Yeah. And I was just telling her the other day about how, like, the Super Friends was this show, this cartoon on TV. It was just ubiquitous. It was always on. So that really, I think that's probably mostly what roped me in. I used to watch some of the old, like, the Adam West Batman. And there was the George Reeves did a Superman television series in the 1950s. And so those were on because everything was on UHF reruns when I was a kid. We didn't have Blu-rays and stuff yet, you know. So I started reading comics, and I was mainly like at first really, as far as comics, I was really into like G.I. Joe and Transformers. Those were like my thing, you know, those are the main comics I read, but then I got into superhero stuff too. And, I decided, mid to late 2000s, I wanted to actually start creating comic books. So I, really got into, I went back and read everything and read all the essentials again and everything. So, and I started work with Anthony Diachidue, who's an artist he lives down the street from me, actually. And we did our first together, Prophet, called Moriarty. And that was an adventure story about Professor Moriarty. Nobody had ever done a Professor Moriarty comic book before. They'd done Sherlock Holmes, and Moriarty had appeared. And Moriarty appeared as a character in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. But they had never been a book just about Professor Moriarty, title character, as a comic. So we were the first to do that. And 100 years of Sherlock Holmes adaptations. So Anthony did that. I worked with Dave Lanfear, did letters, and Mike Vosburgh also drew some of the art for that as well. And Image Comics picked that up. I had been going to conventions for several years at that point and showing pages to editors. Everybody kind of knew who I was. I'd go up to them at conventions and talk to them. And they all knew me at that point, had everybody's emails, and we'd had some sort of rapport. And then it was at that point, though, like everybody had turned me down for Moriarty. And I was like, I'm not going to go to Image. That's too much trouble. They're too big. But finally, I had no choice. They're the only ones left. And so back then, you had to cold snail mailings to them. So you had to snail mail it to them. And I did that. And like 3 weeks later, they wrote me an email saying, hey, we're interested in this. Want to publish it?
Wow. That was crazy. You're like, oh, my God, all my like comic book dreams are coming true right now.
Yeah, it was pretty insane because it was literally kind of like the you hear about like actresses like Lana Turner or whatever in the old days of Hollywood being discovered in the parking lot, you know. It was kind of like I guess I'm leading up to saying it was my Lana Turner moment.
what do you think was the kind of the hook that kind of got them in? Was it, did you kind of like outline a whole series, or did you kind of like just do one or two comic, you know, short comics? How did you kind of approach that?
Well, we didn't have a whole issue at that point, but we had about half an issue done at that point. So I had them pay to, you know, set a date pretty much for the publishing. So, you have to, a lot of people who writers ask me how to get into comics. They want to know, can you send, the publishers don't want to see scripts, you know, they want to see finished work. And so it's really important that you team up with a good artist that you can rely on, that you know is going to hang around and everything. And Anthony and I had already been through this whole like couple of years working on Prophet, so I trusted him really, really well. And So yeah, so yeah, you got to have finished pages to send them, and a synopsis of what it's going to be about and all that. But they have to know that it's all written and mostly or partially drawn before they'll commit to doing it.
You had to be a huge Stan Lee fan because that guy created so many empires in that world.
Yeah,
did you have like, you know, or maybe you still do. Do you feel like comic could next series or animated series? Do you think that's the next level? I know you got into VR, so yeah. Tell me like how you approach that and what your vision is for the comic series.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely have an idea in mind to get the books, adapted into film and television. I can't talk in details, but there was one that's under option right now.
That's
a major studio. Yeah. So, and we have some really big meetings happening over the next couple of weeks that will determine the fate of everything. So, with some of the streaming networks and whatnot. So we'll see what happens there.
It's amazing that like these people that have no experience in creating the said idea are the ones that make the decision if the idea should be made. I find that to be so ridiculous, but it is how it's set up, you know?
It seems a certain way business, and you know, you end up talking to executives and things like that. And I'm not going to disparage anybody that I'm about to be pitching to. So,
I know a lot of industry people, and some are really fantastic. And then I've met a lot of industry people. It's like, you kind of see right through them right away. It's like,
there's some bad apples for sure. And then there, there's some really decent people, executives and producers that have a really creative mind. So I'm hoping that we hook up with some of those.
That's awesome.
So
music is at your core. So tell me like, what awakened that spirit, to kind of get back to music, or was it always, that was like your driving force from the beginning?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, I've kind of like lived this artistic life as sort of a creative generalist because I kind of do a lot of things. I wrote a novel during quarantine. I've written like three screenplays since and stuff like that. And that was a nice ride because I actually over the last couple of years, since things were so slow, I just started sending scripts off to film festivals for competitions and ended up winning like 35 awards. My friends are getting tired of hearing about it. like, really, you're making this up. Shut up. So I'm sorry, but I got off track. What was the question again?
We were talking about how music,
music. How did it get back to music?
Woken by the spirit of music and wanted to come back to it. So tell me what was the catalyst for that to happen?
Yeah. So it's interesting that I just went up on that. And because, there's so many rabbit trails that I go down, but music has always been kind of the number one thing in my life. And that's always been, I always have music playing, always listening, always by film and television and books too. But music is just like, it was like Nietzsche said, life without music is would be meaningless,
Very true.
So there's something, very inherently just, magical and spiritual about music itself. But, I've been playing since I was a kid. I started off playing piano, started playing guitar, started singing in the choir in high school and stuff like that. And in college, I had a period where I had a little band and, we tried to make some things work. And, we all ended up going our separate ways in school and did all this. But, I got into the comics. I got into the theater world and writing plays and producing plays. And I got into the comics and, I got sidetracked on that, but it was like
you've gone through the whole gamut of art. Next, you're going to be like, I want to be a painter. That's the one thing I haven't tackled.
I keep telling myself I'm going to do that, but that's just another thing, But really, it has to do with getting to know Kuruna Tanahashi, who are these like A-list musicians and world-class talents. And watching them do their thing, and I go to see Alex and Dennis. Their band is Bat Farm. I go to see them every chance I can, and watching them operate, watching them do their thing, have been such an inspiration to me that I was like, I'm getting an insider's look at this that not everybody does has a chance to see, and I think I better make a journey back to this because my heart had been aching to do music all this time. And so, it was a handful of years ago, I started getting back to writing songs, and they were a lot better than the ones I wrote in my 20s because I've kind of grown up with some experience in life now.
Well, be careful with that because it's like there's something that like, unbridled romantic when you're in your 20s.
Yeah.
All things that, like, you know, unrequited love, all these things are bugging up. Sometimes I go back and sort through some of the early songs that didn't make it onto records. And I'm like, you know what? This is actually kind of cool. So don't count those songs out. You know, sometimes you get back and be like, maybe this needs a revision or some tweaks, or let's rehearse it just to see what it is.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it'll still have that same life. I say this with experience because, you know, I just released, I think, my 8th record. And the opening track, opening track is a song I wrote 20 years ago. And I knew I was going to open a record with it, but I just, like, it was never the right record for it. And then it became the right record for it. And it just, like, it was so exciting to revisit that. So, yeah, don't revisit those old songs too, man. Don't
shut up about that.
I'm back to writing songs again. Did you find the process to be a little stifling, or was it just like putting on an old shoe that fits?
It was like putting on a brand new shoe that fits. Actually, I just, you know, some things had opened up in my life and my thinking to where, you know, there had been some blocks before that weren't there anymore. I kind of feel a little more like I'm in my 20s now, from the way you described it, than I was in my 20s, actually. I've just learned so much in life and learned so much about making art and the process and, actually, you know, living as an artist, here in Los Angeles for a number of years now has just opened up, you know, so many of these filters, and, things started really kind of clicking and coming together in a really nice way. You know, so, and Alex and Dennis all along have been, you know, encouraging me to, you know, pursue it. And, we had plans to record at some point. And year that we would start working together, and so they've produced the first single for me. It's called Nearsighted, and you know, we have plans to do more. We're gonna be putting together an EP.
That's awesome! Alex was my guest last week, and I just met her recently at our Mint show. She's awesome, and
yeah,
I met her drummer as well. So I know both of them, and I think they're world of their music. So it's awesome. You touched on something real quick that you said. Mm-hmm. You know, that all of a sudden you learned kind of so much about creativity or being an artist. Tell me kind of like touch upon those points, because that's one of the reasons why I love doing this show, is like figuring out what people's creative processes are, or like how they get inspired, or like what defines them as an artist. So tell me a little bit about that process, or like kind of figuring out that journey for you.
Well, it's as story writes, stories, screenplays, comics, and all this, you know, you set out to do a very logical progression of things. You know, you have a character and you want the story to develop and unfold in a very specific way.
A little bit of a hero's journey arc, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly right. So there's a lot of really logical thinking in there, but you also, as an artist, got to balance that with, you know, creative and abstract thinking. I think at some point my muscles for abstract thinking in my brain kind of just started turning on a little more, because, you know, there's a way that you can express yourself in lyrics in a song that is so much different. There's so much more metaphor in a packed into a 3-minute song than there is into a 2-hour, you know, film script. But you can certainly have those kind of brushstrokes in a movie, you know, that kind of creative thinking, but there's something too where a song can be purely abstract. You know, it's like when you watch a movie purely abstract or whatever.
You can feel distant from it. You know, I find when I watch a movie that's a little bit too abstract, I just I don't feel connected to it. But a song can take me to that place, and I'm already creating a movie in my mind. Those are my favorite songs, you know.
Yeah, and it's like goes back to, again, to the kind of spiritual quality of music that I was talking about earlier. There's just something unique about music that you could kind of say the same. You could take the abstract ideas that would make a bad movie and make an amazing song from it, you know.
I like that.
So, yeah, but you know, just taking a strange left turn in dialogue where, you know, an actor is saying one thing but they mean another thing, you know. It kind of translates into songwriting a bit when you kind of like, you can say a specific thing, but you say it in an off kilter way. You take that left turn that somebody wasn't expecting, but they know what you're talking about. Right. You know?
I love it's like what you said. It's like writing something so concise and poignant and beautiful, or having a spirit of fun, whatever it is, and putting it in this 3 to 5 minute, you know, block of art. It's a challenge, and I love that challenge, but it's also, there's an art to the brevity of it. That's what I love in songs. So
yeah.
I feel the same way when you write like a novel or a movie. It's a long-winded process where you're kind of living with it for years. And sometimes songs can be like that too, but songs have this life that is kind of like short and sweet, and it kind of carries meaning as it keeps breathing in stratosphere. You know what I mean? So,
oh yeah, absolutely.
I love that you came back to that. Tell me about your creative process. Do you start with lyrics, start with melodies?
You know, and I've spoken to a lot of other songwriters about this, and you know, there's this kind of moment where you just kind of start vocalizing, and some specific, some words will form, just because you have an emotional expression of just the way you're singing, that some specific words will form kind of subconsciously.
Right.
And then you'll just start riffing with that and like, well, what rhymes with that? You know, and you know, you just get into this kind of mindset where, you know, something that is kind of opaque becomes solid and real, because like just vocalize, you know, speaking is one thing, but then singing is another, you know, when you vocalize it, it suddenly becomes, you're not just talking to people. It's like, you're talking to God, you're talking to the heavens, you're talking to everybody in the universe or something. And so, you know, some of these ideas that are floating around will somehow solidify. And so, and then from there, you got to kind of hunker down and get to the logic part of it to pound it out, you know, like, what is this? What am I saying here? Really?
Yeah.
Like, what if it means this? And then, you know, if you know what it means right up front, then kind of in a way, you know, you could express things so creatively and go all over the place. You know, sometimes though you'll write the whole thing and still not know what it means exactly.
Right.
And I think that's why a lot of times songwriters are like, you tell me what you think it's about.
It's something like how it kind of appears a little bit like magic sometimes, which it is. I did this conference a long time ago, maybe 10 years ago, and there was a magician there, and he did these really cool tricks. And, you know, like, I did a performance right afterwards, and we met up randomly. We had never known each other or anything. And I was like, I went up to him. I said, man, your magic is amazing. And he said, thanks. I love magic. It's like, I really did. I did my most of music, and I loved what you did. And he said, I really feel like musicians are the true magicians. And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, think about it. He's like, with magic, we're like illusionists. We're kind of like tricking you, you know, and it's like not really real, but we're going to make it seem real. But musicians, they literally pull a song out of thin air. And I was like, oh my God, I got chills. Like when he said that, I was like, dude, that's true. I love that. And he's like, seriously, he's like, I don't know how people do that, but I just think it's remarkable. And it's like, I remember sitting there and thinking, man, that's the truth. I mean, musicians, it's just like you said, we'll sit and play a chord progression and it'll turn into a melody, and that melody will turn into a word. And that word may mean nothing, or it becomes the core of the song and, you know, shapes itself. So I love that you're like tuned in like that, because that's how I write. And I feel like that's how songs come about and come to life. So I love that it kind of takes that form for you. Do you love like any part of the process more than the other? Is it lyrics? Is it melody? Is it all of it together that kind of makes it for you? What is it that kind of you draw the most inspiration from?
You know, I think it's the whole thing, as you say, like the whole thing altogether, just because for the most part, that's how it usually comes to me. I've had occasions where I'll sit down and write a nice poem and I'll be like, do I have any music that this works for? Like, oh, this riff I've been playing with for a long time, this works. So that's happened too. And that's nice. But like really the really special ones kind of come out of the ether that way. You know, I know like, I'm a really big fan of U2, and I know that,
me too.
Oh, no. Yeah. He writes his lyrics while the band is playing, you know, and he calls, you know, and they made a documentary and it's called Sky Down. Actually, got to talk to Steve Lillywhite once, and he was saying that when he writes a poem and goes in and sings it, it's terrible. He's like, he's got to come up with it as he's singing. But when you listen to those songs and you hear what the great lyrics, it's like, wow, that's how they do it. Cause it doesn't sound hackneyed at all. It sounds very polished and real, but it's because that's the way that's the way they polish their things.
But a lot of it, the band like will write and arrange everything. Mm-hmm. And he'll come in and sometimes he'll be traveling and doing like humanitarian things. And then he'll come in and the band will have kind of composed mm-hmm. five or six songs. And then he just goes to town and starts writing and mm-hmm. melodies. And it's kind mm-hmm. of crazy that it works like that. Like it's mm-hmm. not always together in the room. I love U2, by the way. Mm-hmm. My brother is a huge fan. We've seen him many times. I've also met the guy that was
Daniel. I actually interviewed him. Yeah. He's
wonderful. Such a badass dude. He's like, met him twice. And every time I meet him, I'm like, that guy is the truth when it comes to music. He's just
absolutely
just of the real. So anyways, let's play something. What do you want to play first?
I suppose we could, I don't know. Do we want to drop the single first?
Let's do the single first.
All right. So this is my, my upcoming single, Nearsighted. So it's produced by, Al Scalise and Dennis Morehouse. And so it's me on guitars and lead vocals and Alex on harmonies, and it's probably June 1st. We're thinking, I think it might be cool.
Release. Here it is. Here's your view by Daniel Corey.
Don't go moving around. Don't you reach too far. Stay right where you are. Knowing all the things I'm told. The side of failure's getting old. Don't you speak to me. Don't be so absurd. Just thinking back, remembering all your words. I'm just thinking about this year. Race keeps falling off my back. Slip, slip, sliding through the cracks. The meaning of it all is going slack. Sometimes wonder what you think I'm going through. Nearsighted and I'm blinded at the sight of you. Don't you feel too proud? Don't you scream out loud? Nothing ever stayed. King and pawns will play. Things I meant to say. Common sense got in. Race keeps falling off my back. Slip, slip, sliding through the cracks. The meaning of it all is going slack. I sometimes wonder what you think I'm going through. Nearsighted and I'm blinded at the sight of you. Sometimes wonder what you think I'm going through. Nearsighted and I'm blinded at the sight of you.
sometimes wonder what you think I'm going through. Nearsighted and I'm blinded at the sight of you.
Very cool.
Thank you. Thank you.
Correction, nearsighted, not near view. I was thinking rear view.
Oh, it's not even out yet, so you'll get to know it.
So tell me about the inspiration behind the song. What made you write it?
I was definitely thinking along the, you know, vibes of like 70s FM radio, Paul Simon and things like that. I'm also a really big fan of Fruit Bats, and Alex had actually sent me this link of this short film they did. What's that?
I don't know Fruit Bats. What's Fruit Bats?
Oh yeah, his name's Eric D. Johnson, and he's this amazing songwriter and amazing vocalist. He's got this really unusual like tenor quality of his voice, and he's just this prolific songwriter. He's put out, I don't know, he's probably about as many albums as you, but. And it's kind of Americana-ish, you know, type stuff, maybe along the REM lines here and there. But I watched a film that he did because I kind of got, you know, at that point, I kind of caught in this net of this particular vibe, you know, and that's when I started writing Nearsighted. And at the heart of it, it's, you know, it's a song about heartache and loss. And I'm just like, you know, life can break your heart in so many different ways, and especially when you live in Hollywood and you got to deal with the rejection. So I'm really talking about, you know, a lot of it has to do with the rejection and of Hollywood, you know, I suppose is what the topic is really of that song, though it's framed as a love song.
People that reject anything artistic usually don't have vision or much art in them. You know what I mean? It comes down to, if you have music in you, you should be able to see where something's at and the possibilities. If you don't have it in you, then I don't think it should be music. You know how the industry, there's that balance of power. It has to kind of run that way. But I love that you're way into Paul Simon. I'm super. We have a lot of the same influences. I know you're big into Dave Matthews. Big into Paul Simon. I got to tell you something super cool. Yes. So I went to this Q&A with Paul Simon.
Oh,
and
nice.
It was at the Grammy Museum. And I usually don't raise my hand and ask questions. I usually just sit and listen.
Yeah. But
Paul Simon, I was sitting in like the third row.
I
got to ask this guy a question. So I raised my hand and he was like, this guy right here. And I said, you know, Clive Davis said Bridge Over Troubled Water is the greatest song ever written. What's the song that you wish you wrote? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, I never really thought Bridge Over Troubled Water was my song because he said, I only sang on a verse and art was in it. And I really feel like that was my song. But if I had to choose a song that I wish I wrote, and this is crazy and awesome, he said it would be Silent Night. And I was like, what?
Christmas song.
He's like, something about that lilting melody. It's just, it's amazing. And this was like a CD release for his latest record.
Yeah.
And so like everybody got copies of his record.
Yeah.
And I put it in on the way home. In the middle of one of the songs, he quotes Silent Night.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, that's why, you know, it was so random.
We had that song Christmas Day on So Beautiful or So What, that album, probably that one, right? Yeah.
Actually the record right after that one.
Oh, okay.
So Beautiful, So What, it's I don't know the name of the song, but I'll send it to you.
Yeah, yeah. But he quotes a lot of like biblical stuff and talks about God a lot. So that makes sense.
Crazy that Beatles song, a Stevie Wonder song, you know?
Yeah.
He chose Franz Gruber's song from like the 1800s, you know? So crazy. So I just want to share that with you because not many people know that story or have heard it. And, I knew you'd appreciate it because you love Paul Simon like I do.
Yeah.
You love fingerstyle guitar, and I love that too. Mm-hmm. James Taylor has to be an influence on you. I'm sure he is.
What? Who was it?
James Taylor.
Oh, yeah. I heard a lot of that. Lots of all that 70s, the kind of finger picking music. I heard that so much growing up. And, you know, a lot of those artists like Joan Baez and Paul Simon, you know, See, when I was a kid, I loved the Muppet Show, and this is back in the early 80s, they showed the Muppet Show on NBC, and you know, it was in syndication at that point, and it was on night and audition, you know, play, and yeah, so that was kind of an early an influence. And this song, Nearsighted, I keep telling my wife, I'm like, why did I write this song? Sounds like it should be on the Muppet Show. But, you know, it was like when Paul Simon was on the Muppet, that's my favorite. Paul Simon's episode is my favorite episode of the Muppet Show. That's got something, there's some link there, I'm sure, as to how the song came into being because of the Muppet Show and because of Paul Simon and Fruit Bats.
Yeah, such an interesting, like, finger style. And I love that you're kind of bringing that back because that style of playing is so, it just brings you in. It's, like, very intimate. Yeah. And it's not easy to do. Like, it's actually one of my weaker parts of my playing just because I feel like I just kind of play what my fingers want to instead of actually doing the technique. But I just find it to be such a cool style of a play. I mean, it really comes from like Bach fugue of fingerstyle guitar because it has such an intimacy that you just want to listen to the song as soon as you hear it. You know, that's kind of what Paul Simon brought to the table. It's kind of what a lot of those, you know, 70s songwriters. Do you find that in this market, because, like, you know, we're in 2022 and everything's DJs, electronic. Yeah. Do you find that, like, some of the songwriting parts of music, it's almost like a lost art? Do you feel like it is having a resurgence, a new renaissance, or do you feel like the path is kind of incorporating old with new sounds, or do you kind of, like, think that throwback thing? Because I love the throwback thing, old intimate, like, songwriter playing guitar or piano singing into a microphone. There's nothing more special to me than that. It'll always have this, like, amazing prized possession. Like, fine with, like, people in the 70s and 80s, like, our generation, we feel music like that. But I don't know if it's because of tech, you know, if it's the technology that kind of drives the art, but do you find that there's you know, kind of like this discrepancy between how the art is perceived when it's, you know, I love folk music, but folk music to a millennial is a different, you know, it's like almost old timey, but I'm like, no, it's not. It's so beautiful. It's like, what is happening now? How do you find that place in the marketplace that, you know, kind of like putting that back into the marketplace? How do you feel about that? I'm so curious because I love all those songwriters that you're influenced by, I'm influenced by, and they're like, it's like a dwindling part of the trend in music, and it drives me crazy because that to me is the truest song when they sit and just intimacy is right then and there. And most of the bands and artists I see, a lot of them are playing the tracks, and it's like, not real. It's like, drives me crazy. I'm like, take the computers away and just play me a song, you know? So how do you feel that that resurgence can either take place or is it taking place?
Well, you know, the thing is, I find that for me to find the music that I like is so much easier now because of all the streaming services, because of the Spotify and all that. And I know, like, Spotify has its thing as far as, like, how people are being paid. That's the problem. But then the great thing about it is it kind of is democratizing access to music, you know, and it's giving so many different sorts of artists that wouldn't get play on terrestrial radio a voice, you know, like somebody like Fruit Bats, you know, I found them on Spotify. And my favorite is this duo called Beta Radio. And I got to interview them during a quarantine period. And but the thing is, like, you go on Spotify, if you look for Beta Radio and you look at all their, if you kind of look through all their numbers, they had, like, at least when I interviewed them, they had something close to 100 million streams or something. And they're doing like very mystical, like Americana folk music. They don't have like any like fast songs. You know what I mean? It's all beautiful transcendental stuff. And so people are finding that, you know, it's just, you know, it's just, you know, youth culture defines a lot in society, it seems. So, you know, we hear about the young artists.
That's what I find to be kind of remarkable because it's like, is that what is dictating the trend? Or is it, you know, older people saying this needs to hit and this is who we're going to gear it towards? And then it becomes a trend. Because the reason I ask is, like, I have a very, like respectful place for songwriters. I just feel like songwriters, that craft is a very special thing to me. And a lot of it's being done with, you know, 10 people in a room instead of like a songwriter writing a song and recording it. And that's, I have so much respect for what you're doing because you're a songwriter. You're just recording your emotions, your stories, your, you know, your poems into these beautiful songs. And it deserves more eyeballs and ears to kind of understand how difficult it is to do that. Because I find that there's so many pop artists today that they're not writing their own songs. You know, there's like 10 people writing the song for them and the producer is doing the track and somebody else is playing guitar and they sing a couple words. And it's like, you see like Paul Simon, what a visionary in music. It's like, he was making concepts. He was, every record was a different vibe and feel. So I love that you come from that 70s, you know, influence. How did that come about? Was it your family? Was it just what was on the radio when you were growing up? Like what all those songs? I'm sure you were into Simon and Garfunkel. And you were in, and then you got into Dave Matthews. Tell me a little bit about like how those songwriters kind of helped evolve the direction of what you love the music or what, how you like to write.
Wow. That's great. Great question. I mean, so my, you know, my parents loved artists like, you know, Simon and Garfunkel. And like, also my dad was a huge Motown listener. And so, you know, I heard all the great music growing up. And I also, you know, going to church, like hearing, you know, hearing pianos and choirs and organs, playing, access to hearing like really good music all the time, which was a real blessing, you know. But I remember like, the first time I was probably, I don't know, 8 or something, but like I was driving with my dad through the neighborhood. We're going somewhere at night and Scarborough Fair came on the radio. And I just remember being entranced. I'm like, I've never heard anything this beautiful, you know, it was mystical. And it was like, you know, this is, you know, there's, you know, it kind of like in the Walt Whitman sense of like a transcendentalism, you know, where you kind of just get lost in this moment and you kind of go on out beyond yourself. You know, so it was like what I was exposed to and like what my family was into. So I heard a lot of like the, you know, again, it's like the Paul Simons and all these type of from the Joan Bonnot. It was, you know, in the mid-90s when Dave Matthews first hit, I remember being at a friend's house kind of late and he had MTV on because it was in the mid-90s, you know, and they turned it on. It was like in the middle of What Would You Say, his first single, you know, it was like in the middle of that song. And it was just like in the very, I just heard it like two notes and I sat down and I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
Cause I had never heard anything like this. I mean, I'd never heard somebody play an acoustic guitar like that before. It was so, you know, so creative and so different, these crazy sliding riffs he was coming up with. And I was just like, I want to do something like that. And I wasn't really able to accomplish anything like that, you know, anytime in the 90s, I would say. But it took a while for me to really come in to have a voice as a guitarist. But, you know, it was back in the beginning of 2020 before all the badness. We talked about Daniel Lanois earlier. You know, he was playing a lot. The bassist, Jim Wilson, a little bit. And Jim's a great guy and a genius as well. You know, they were playing weekly, getting ready for a tour that sadly wasn't able to happen because of a pandemic. But they were playing weekly and just in this small room in Zebulon. And, you know, that was huge on me. And like Daniel always plays fingerstyle. He plays electric most of the time, but he's always playing fingerstyle. So, you know, from that point, I was like, and from, you know, from hearing him and seeing him before, but really getting ensconced in that world, I was like, I'm going to put the picks aside for a little while. I'm only going to play with my fingers and see what happens. And, you know, then a lot of the stuff from my childhood and then from the mid 90s and then what's happening now just kind of came through my fingers. And I was able to kind of develop a newer style for myself that I felt really at home in, as because I hadn't really felt at home in any kind of style before.
Never stop, because finger style to me is, it's like I said, it's like such an intimate art form and a way to play the guitar. I think I only have like maybe 2, maybe 3 songs that kind of showcase that. And it's like, I always look to have a song. Like I always hope I can write a song in that direction, mm-hmm. but it doesn't always come out that way. Like sometimes I just want to strum or I want to play something weird and different. Yeah. And you know, it's just interesting. So let's showcase this video you have, because you have a different approach to playing here than the fingerstyle. Yeah. And I want to talk about it a little bit. So what's the name of this song that we're going to play?
So this is the first time, and it's a live video. And actually Karuna Tanahashi actually did the videography here. It was kind of a spur of the moment thing. It's a kind of a percussive style that I like to do. So.
And you said it's called First.
The First Time.
First Time. The First Time. Here's The First Time by Daniel Corey. You got the video? There. Sam?
It was the first time that I know I saw your face. You were drawing log lines in a scattered looking outer space. I knew that this time was for good.
Sam, right there. But let's play this video, Sam.
Everything was understood. We all have first times. Walking through our lifelines. It was the first time that I knew you'd break my heart. When I knew the way of lights for when hungry for another start. It was the last time that I'd hear you call me out. Maybe all alone, just wondering what it's all about. Maybe all alone, just wondering what it's all about. It was the first time that I had the plunging foggy black. I knew that this time was for good. Let it slip it out of my fingers, everything was understood. We all have first times, walking through our lifelines. Going hungry for another start. It was the last time that I'd hear you call me out. Leave me all alone, just pondering on what it's all about. Leave me all alone, just pondering on what it's all about.
Slapping, you were like slapping and kind of doing all that. Did you hear me?
I got you just the very end of that sentence.
No, I said, tell me some of your approach with some of like that. You were like slapping and playing guitar in a different way in the finger style. Tell me how you came up with some of that percussive style of playing.
Yeah, it was just kind of an extension of like the normal kind of finger, the regular kind of finger picking that you hear. Again, it was just a matter of how I was trying to figure out a way to express myself differently. And I'm like, well, I want to do a lot on this guitar, on the guitar, but I also want to do it kind of with an economy of movement and such. You know, so it was a weird thing to say, I suppose. But you know, I had seen a couple of artists that I really liked when I was a kid that I first saw like in high school and college. There was a couple of Nashville Christian artists. One was named Phil Kagi, and the other was Wes King, and they do a lot of tapping, you know, and on the fretboard and all that. I hadn't like really concentrated on that part of it, but there was something about the right hand expressiveness that they were doing that I really liked. And I kind of came upon the style of kind of keeping the left hand a little more simpler than what those guys would do, obviously, but then like keeping the, you know, being very dynamic with the right hand. And it's like, well, I want to make rhythms, and I also want to get some riffs in there, and I also want to kind of pick strum in the middle and try some different things. So I found that I was able to do a variety of different types of dynamic things on the guitar there. It took a couple of years for that to really kind of come together the way you saw it there.
The first thought I had when I saw it, I was like, this is like August Rush, which I love that movie.
Kaki King. Yeah, I got to interview her for Guitar Girl magazine, a few years ago. That was pretty awesome. I had her show where behind her was all multimedia, and she's like picking and tapping and playing all these crazy tunings and stuff. And she's a big inspiration for sure.
She's a badass. I think she and Daniel Lemoine did some stuff together too.
Oh yeah. Oh, I have to look that up. I didn't know they were together.
Like 10 years ago, I think he produced one or two tracks, or did maybe it was a soundtrack. I think it was a soundtrack, actually. They worked on a soundtrack. I can't remember what it was, but they worked on some stuff together. She's awesome. Dude, you know all the same music as I do. Like, it's crazy. It's awesome. Do you know Patrick Droney? You got to check out Patrick Droney.
Oh, I have to look him up now.
He's my newest like player and singer-songwriter that I just think he's more electric and more of that blues influence. But
I'll send you links for Fruit Bats. You send me links for Patrick.
That's awesome. So tell me about when you sit down to write, are you thinking about maybe it's you're looking at the world? Do you think about what's happening in the world? Is it kind of sporadic in the moment? Is it like, are you writing as your present self? Are you writing as a younger self? Tell me how, like, when you, your narrative, when you're writing, how is it shaped?
Oh, that's really interesting. You know, I mean, I feel like we are as humans, what is happening in the world, you know? So, you know, what is happening in the world, affects us emotionally. And, in songwriting is an emotional art. So, whatever comes out is an expression of what is happening in the world. I don't necessarily talk specifically about, I don't like to be on the nose, because some writers are really good about being on the nose about things. I'm at my worst when I'm on really on the nose, with my lyrics.
You like to disguise it.
Yeah, exactly. Just kind of dread up. A poet, he created plays to hang his poetry on, you know what I mean?
Right.
Again, all that to say, I just, I'm not at my best when I'm super literal. So, I like to kind of create, a space where people can understand how I feel about what's going on, and maybe make them reflect upon their own lives and how they feel about what's going on, you know?
Yeah. You know, I find that I'm always chasing maybe my current self, but there are times where I'll write about something that struck me years ago and I'm still trying to process it, or it's something that's happening that's immediate. And it's so immediate that I don't even allow that perspective to sink in, because I just want to capture that lightning in a bottle from the raw the emotion is. So I feel as if I was kind of chasing it earlier. Now it's a little bit more seasoned. It's like, I'll take my time with it, and I won't rush into songs. I will kind of make sure that the song gets to where it needs to be, and no questioning, where it's going. You know what I mean? It's if it goes somewhere weird, it's going to go somewhere weird, and I'm okay with it, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting you were in a band when you were 20. Mm-hmm. How do you feel like you as a writer at 20 is completely different than you as a writer now?
A lot of it has to do with experience. Just, having your heart broken a number of times, and like I said, there are many different ways to get your heart broken, romantically, and also just, relationally with friends, through business, there's so many ways to get your heart broken. And it's the heart that makes you come from a better person and a different person, and having more perspectives. I only had a particular perspective when I was that age. When you're that young, you're just like, this is the way to do this. But you can you learn how to take those blinders off and kind of see things. You can still have the same kind of beliefs and perspectives you did back then, but you can see a little more, and the more you see, the more you can talk about it, so
yeah, it's interesting. I find that my writing is a little less dramatic as I'm older, yeah, but a little bit also more kind of subdued and thought provoking. And, you know, mm-hmm, it's weird how it changes as maybe I'm changing in that way. So who knows? You're going to play something live for us, right? What are you going to play us?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a song called Hear the Sound. And I just had to put some brand new strings on right before this, so I was going to do a quick tune. But I'll tell you, this is one that it started one day, and I started writing on it. But this is one, it took about 3 months to really refine the lyrics. And then, you know, about as long really to come up with the way I wanted to play it. So this is one that was kind of like, you know, not one of the long ones that you spent a couple of years marinating on, but a little bit longer. It took a little longer than just a couple of hours, you know. Sometimes you could pop out a really nice one in just a couple hours.
I like that you're showcasing the lamb chop too. You're just like, let me just give you while I tune.
Thanks. Oh yeah. Yeah. That was, these came from when I was doing my Moriarty book, and I just kind of, you know, I wanted to brand Professor Moriarty. And so they just kind of stuck.
That's awesome. But, cool look, man. So what are you going to play? What's the name of the song one more time?
Hear the Sound. So,
here you go. Daniel Corey with Hear the Sound.
All right. Falling down. When I see that place, when I hear the sound, the dawn is coming round. Spirit speak to me, don't let me down. Scorpion line in the golden shine. I see what they shall seek. My soul will say what my lips can't speak. My body aches with me. My eyes will fail my heart. And dreams of endless rose, music's walls scale. You see me falling, falling down. When I see that place, when I hear the sound, dawn is coming round. Spirit speak to me, don't let me down. Sweet like smoke in the sun. There's a mirror reflects all the things I've done. I see that face someday. When it's all revealed, I'll be shown the way. My body aches with me. My eyes will fail, my heart is weak. See right through the veil. Send dreams of endless roads, music's walls scale. You see me falling, falling down. When it's not playing every sound, spirit speak to me, don't let me down. Coming faster for me every day. I seem to find my way. Spirit come at me, a welcome change. All becomes new, all because of you. No, 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 be stormin' day. No, be stormin' day. My body aches with me. My eyes will fail, my heart is weak. You see right through the veil. Send dreams of endless roads, music's walls to scale. See me falling, falling down. When I see that place, when I hear the sound, the dawn is coming round. Spirit speak to me aloud. When I see that place, when I hear the sound, the dawn is coming round. Spirit speak to me, don't let me let you down. I won't let you down. I won't let you down. I won't let you down.
Yeah, man. That was awesome. I like that style. Like, it's percussive. It's like, it's just got rhythm. It's got a lot of dynamics. It's very cool, man. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me play it. I appreciate it.
Where can people find you? Where can people find you if they want to find your music online or follow you on websites, etc.?
All right. So my online name is Danger Cat. That's Danger K-A-T-T. So you can find me at the Danger and Danger Cat on Twitter. So I'll be hitting Spotify though for the first time, and Spotify and all the streamers, probably June 1st is the date we're aiming for, so that you'll be able to really find my songs then. But yeah, I do have Danger videos.
Daniel Corey, which one, what's your moniker going to be for the music?
The music is going to be Daniel Corey. Okay. But it'll be a Danger Cat production. You'll see that in the liner, okay. In the liner notes. Yeah.
Cool. So, we look forward to hearing more music, and we definitely have to connect on music, man. I didn't get time to talk about it, but I actually opened for Dave Matthews, and I did.
Look at you! Oh man,
I'm a huge Dave Matthews fan. Whenever somebody says they love Dave Matthews, I'm like, oh, we're gonna be friends right away, man, because I just love music so much. And you know, you have a lot of the same influences, and I love it. Keep playing, keep writing, keep recording.
Me too.
We want to have you performing. We'll have to do some shows together. Music June 1st, his single drops on Spotify. We're going to have you back on the show as you have more songs, Daniel. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your perspective.
Thank
and for
you.
Being on Wake Up Hollywood, man.
Yeah, high thank five, you so much. Right, thank you. Thank you. It's been fun. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And of course. Take care. And on behalf of Sam, myself, and Daniel, thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week. Peace and love.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.